You asked for a liar rejoin. You got it.
You know who's a liar is the guy in the Twitch chat who said this is a good song. This is terrible.
How dare you? It's Megadeth.
Yikes.
Yeah, I don't like it.
That's real soothing.
I'd rather listen to Alex Cora lie to me than listen to this song about lying.
Oh, we got to get to that.
Oh, we'll get to that, Ted. Don't you worry. There's more meat
on that bone. Bill Belichick lied to you all the time, and you just ate it up.
Always Bill with you. Bill. Talk about Alex. We're also talking to our buddy Tom E. Curran. He's joining us on the phone right now, and he is brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at drainsbyjames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Tom E. Curran, do you give a poop about the fact that Drake May threw four interceptions the other day?
Yes, I do. And the reason is, look, they're not going out there and working out and practicing just for the fun of it. I mean, you want to have every single rep executed well. And you can have mitigating circumstances on each one. One was a miscommunication, one was a bad throw, one was a pull. Who cares? You know what? If the rep wasn't good, you are well within your rights as a coaching staff and as a quarterback yourself to say, that's way beneath what I should be expecting of myself. Don't excuse it. Don't wave it away. Don't say it's May. Don't say it's only practice. Don't say it's only OTAs. Expect more from yourself. And I think that that is going to be, we're going to talk about this on Boston Sports tonight this evening as a little preview.
Like it.
I really want to see how Drake May reacts to the heat being turned up. And as I said in one of our show emails, he's about to get the Tatum treatment, where people expect a lot from a third overall pick and perhaps a franchise savior type player. And is he ready for it? Is he ready to be called out? Is he ready for people to flip out about four picks at an OTA? Because he's not Mac Jones and he's not Joe Milton. He's the third overall pick, and everybody has thrown bouquets and sung hosannas and hallelujahs since he got here. And they want to return on the potential. So that, I think, is very interesting to watch unfold.
Love this. I just love it. I love that stance, Tom. I mean, let's go. I mean, that's every rep is valuable, even if it's in May. So I love that. What is your take? I've been listening to you and Phil, and I can't remember if it was you or Phil that mentioned that the playbook, Josh McDaniels, is not really holding back, that it doesn't feel like it's trimmed down, or I think maybe one of you guys were referencing something that Hunter Henry said about that. What is your take about just Josh McDaniels behind the scenes with Drake May, and what is he throwing at him? Is it too much? Mm-hmm. Is it what's your take on that?
First on the playbook, to hear Hunter Henry tell it, they're basically going to run the things that they ran in 2021. I'm sure that Josh is going to reach across the aisle to make sure that it's user-friendly for guys like Drake May. But I think what Phil was referencing was you saw three tight ends, you saw wide zone, you saw gap runs, you saw duo, all this other stuff that Phil gets all excited about, and I'm sure you do too, Teddy. Hoss. So, and Phil's just, wow, you know, all this stuff in. And it's not in. They're just running it. And last year, as we watched it, was a lot of wide zone and Alex Van Pelt during minicamp. And again, I defend Alex Van Pelt. He was in a bad situation and they wanted to rebuild and build up a young player. All they did was friggin' footwork. Quarterback drops and footwork in the early stages because they were trying to build from friggin' zero. But Josh has them much further ahead. I don't know whether too much is being thrown at Drake May or not. I think he's mentally tough. I think he's sharp. I think he is resilient. I think just based upon the testimony given by all his teammates and coaches, he wants to learn. So even if he is having a difficult time in any facet, and I don't know that he is, just keep pouring it on and he'll catch up. What'll be interesting to me, all of us is having spent time in classrooms, does Josh go as fast as the fastest or majority of learners? Or does he slow down for the stragglers? Or does he say, you know what, we're going to move you down to the UFL?
Wow. So, Tommy, you have talked about a renewed sense of urgency and uptick in energy for quite a while now, basically ever since Vrabel said yes to the dress and came back as the 16th coach of the franchise in January. Taking like a broader view of OTAs and how things are moving now, do you still see that same energy? Do you still see the same urgency? And what's just your general feel of the overall vibe down there this week?
I do. I see much greater urgency, a lot of demands. You know, they're running full speed on a few different drills. There was a pursuit drill, an angle pursuit drill. I saw guys like Christian Barmore. Some of the players stood out to me. He had almost perfect attendance. The only guys who weren't there were generally dealing with injuries or personal situations, like Ramondre Stevenson in a grieving period. They had virtually everybody there. There was no Devon Godshaw home kicking rocks. There was no, you know, drama with whoever there was drama with last year. Who the hell was it?
Judon.
They're just up and running. So I feel that they're responding to the urgency that Vrabel has brought. And this lack of urgency really dates back. Come on. I mean, honestly, I'm going to do it again. It really dates back to like 2017 and 18. Mm-hmm. You know, just put it off. Well, Tom, we're going to chase Tom's ass out of here. Well, what's our succession plan? Well, we don't have one, really. Okay, well, we're going to lose Josh McDaniels. What's our succession plan? What's the rush? It's minicamp. Phil Perry, what are you, an idiot? Why are you asking us who's going to be the play caller in minicamp? You think we call plays in minicamp? What are you, an idiot? It's just that kind of tenor of non-urgency and we'll figure it out when it reveals itself has vanished. And last year being a prime example, too, the entire franchise basically calling it a foundational year to mulligan. You can't have that. Can you tell I did at the gym? I was 40 minutes on the bike. Jesus. I had a little C4.
I noticed. I just been shooting around. Lucky energy.
It's
on this
Andy
show.
Hart-esque, actually, right now, which is impressive.
Yeah, I'm going to collapse on the other side of this.
Holy Moses, the crash is going to be spectacular. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. So, Tom, I think there's a couple positions we all believe/hope they're going to be better at on offense. That's O-line, the offensive line and wide receiver. But there's still a lot of bodies and moving parts at both of those positions. Did we get a little early?
Is this a two-part question?
Sampling? I don't know. What am I, John Dennis? Jeez. Did we get a little early sampling in OTAs of maybe how that's going to play out? And Pop Douglas, was I premature a year when I said 100 catches for him?
Might have been. No, you're right on, baby. You're right on.
Suck on that, Ted.
He was the one who was most excited, Ted, about what Josh will bring to the offense. I really think that Josh is going to try to feature him as much as he can do. Great, and if he breaks down, good. That's rough.
Wow.
If he breaks down, Efton Jenkins comes in. You know, somebody who's been on the practice squad.
Chisholm, you mean?
Chisholm.
Yeah, and by the way, Phil Perry.
Who the hell is Efton Jenkins?
I don't know. You went to school with him or something, probably.
And by the way, Phil, can you tell the senator, tell Phil Perry to calm down? His Efton Chisholm excitement is off the charts. My God.
See a doctor.
Get a room, guys.
She stands up.
I was going to make a filthy pun. but I think it is, it's fun to watch these guys embrace their new roles. I do think DeMario Douglas will do that. What I'm curious is, you know, I think that most of us, or most people, not me included, because I don't think Cole Strange is an absolute disgrace to the game of football. I really don't.
I agree with
He's
you.
He's had occasions where he played at a capable level.
Yeah.
Not a Pro Bowl level, but he was a decent enough starter. He's been victimized by dealing with a really bad patella injury for 2 years. He did not have surgery on it in 2023. He did have surgery on it in 2024. He's not a slouch. There's a guy who could help. Caden Wallace was pretty good when he was out there, except for the ankle. Layden Robinson shouldn't be a stiff. So those are things that I look at for the depth that, as we all do in friggin' May, this guy looks good. You know who looked good the other day to me, even though it was a limited participation? Jalen Polk.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the same thing I would do every year with Tyquan Thornton.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Huh. Yeah, that I just
every year.
Yeah, the dog looking at you sideways. Hmm? Really? Okay. I want to do a two part.
Just
like Andy does all the time. But how's the fourth overall pick looking? I mean, I don't know. Will Campbell starter day one. Should probably be the starter there for the next 12 years. I don't know. People are talking about his narrow shoulders. He looks like a pear.
They really are.
Yeah. So
that jumps out at you. Phil and I talked about that on the pod, and Phil said, you know, you're really a body type guy. And I do. I think body types are really interesting, honestly. I mean, I've read a lot of interesting books reflective of body types. There's a book called The Sports Gene by David Epstein, which I found really interesting. You know, the best athletes in the world have skinny ankles.
Yeah.
And narrow calves. And you can look it up.
It's true. There's truth to that.
You know, the best swimmers have long-ass bodies and short legs because their body acts as a hulk. Mm-hmm. Fascinating book. Tremendously politically incorrect, I think, in this day and age. But it's fascinating to read because, you know, you have evidence to back things up. But when you look at Will Campbell, just on first blush, his shoulders are 20 to 25% more narrow than everybody else along the offensive line. And they were in shell-type pads. But his shoulders are very normal size, narrow. Meaning normal human narrow.
Right.
Which leads to probably a little bit of the wingspan situation. If your shoulders are closer to your neck as opposed to further away, then your arms are going to be a little shorter. How does his unbelievably sophisticated, athletic, well-developed, and solid lower body compensate for any upper body limitations? And how does his mind work? And how does his first step work? All that stuff, as you guys know, is going to matter. And I really like listening to Morgan Moses talk about how much he liked him. Garrett Bradbury, the center from Minnesota, who's come in. They're very positive about him. So all I can tell you is, what did I see from Will Campbell? I can see why scouts and analysts will look at him and say, wow, he doesn't have a normal build for a franchise left tackle. I can see it. So we'll see if he refutes it.
Milton Williams put a story on Instagram of him battling against Will Campbell, saying that, you know, they had a little dogfight out there, which was also good. So it's nice to see that he's getting a little respect from the teammates as well. I did want to end on another positive note, Tom. I did a podcast this morning with your pal, Mego, and she said, while cozying up to you and chatting down there the other day, you said to her, "See that over there? Look at that. Look how good Barmore looks." If Christian Barmore really does look better and he's feeling healthier, do we really have the chance for like a good old-fashioned classic Patriots defensive line again?
Absolutely, you have the potential. I mean, Keon White, don't want to take him at 17. Got him at whatever in the second round.
38, yeah.
And he's shown why he would be looked at that way. He's a very smart kid. He's got a temperament that would, I think, if channeled the right way, be unbelievably solid. Vrabel might be the kind of guy to be able to channel that because he's so smart. He's one of those guys, Ted. Remember the guys who used to score too high in the Wunderlich, and people are like, oh, we don't need these smart guys, independent thinkers. I think Keon White's a very smart and intelligent guy, and he wants to know the why of things. And we saw that last year. We would sit in the post game and talk about, is he freelancing out there? Is he trying to make a play? Mm-hmm. And probably he was, because like, we suck. If I don't try to make plays, we're just going to lose again. So hopefully they can channel that tremendous resource and make it good. Milton Williams is Milton Williams. Barmore is a ridiculously good player and hasn't even scratched the surface. He should be a Pro Bowl level player, and he looked great. And then I really like, every time I turn on Harold Landry and we all talk about what the worst offseason signing was, or the most questionable at least, was either him or Carlton Davis. And if you just watch Harold Landry get off the ball last year, coming off the defensive left, offensive right, it's like he's shot out of a friggin' cannon. If anybody out there remembers Ricochet Racers, he comes out like a Ricochet Racer. Nobody remembers.
Ricochet. Nope. I remember Ricochet Rabbit, yes.
You don't remember Ricochet Racers, though?
No.
Nope.
They were a toy. I'm going to send you the link.
Okay.
I want to link to that book, actually, if you don't mind.
I'm actually more interested in the book
as well. I'm curious about that book. Yeah. So if you,
what if you're shaped like a Florida avocado? Does that help?
Oh, it's fascinating.
Yeah, what was it's I made for?
About, hard work.
There you go. Yeah.
All right, Tom.
You really were. You
He's
were,
a pack
you were
mule, exactly.
Made for hard work.
Go find a couch because you're going to crash soon. You're coming down off the gym high, the energy drink high.
What do you have to work in, though?
You gave us a good hit here. So we'll talk to you next week. A little more Patriots OTAs, right?
Thanks, bud.
All right, yeah, we'll have another one. Okay, kids.
Stay back. See ya. Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, breaking down body types for us.
Efton Jenkins.
I love it.
Yeah, well, Efton Jenkins, making up names of players,
dude,
that don't exist.
That's after a workout when you're starving you're, like, lightheaded.
You may or may not have forgotten you had to do this.
That's what that interview was. God bless it. He got through it.
But he did a great job, and he thinks good things are coming for DeMario Douglas. Great minds think alike. We'll talk a little bit about that and some other Patriots nuggets next here on WEEI Afternoons.
We are back at the Lobster Trap in Bourne on the Cape Road Show number 2. Coming up, our guy Slane, actor, rapper, everyday listener of the Greg Hill Show, will be with us around 9 or so this morning. We are obviously going to play some Hill Notes back at 9:20, so you can leave one of those as you can anytime you want.
on the Odyssey app. You see the little microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and talk to your heart's content with a voice note for us. But with us now here this morning, kicking off Memorial Day weekend, the great Rob Ninkovich, former New England Patriot Rob Ninkovich.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Good morning.
Beautiful weather weekend we have here.
Yeah.
Hopefully the rain goes away.
Were you planning to do anything? Are you doing anything with the family? Or
I was planning to go to Nantucket, but the boat will not make it over there
now. Well, you weren't going ferry. You were going private watercraft?
Yes, friends.
Were you going?
Friend boat. Friends boat. You always have friends with boats.
Were you going on Bill's new boat?
Were you the plus one?
Plus one ring? That's AI generated. We know. That's,
no.
Come on. There's no way you're putting that on there.
When has TMZ been wrong?
Greg's inside scoop said that it's real.
That's no. I don't. So, I can't believe it until I see it with my own eyes. Okay?
You don't believe it?
I don't believe it. A picture, especially on the internet, you can't believe
but
anything.
But, Nick, doesn't this change your whole foundational understanding of this guy that helped you win Super Bowls? Isn't this, like, so crazy? You know better than anybody.
Yeah,
how he was all about distractions, all that stuff.
Since we're talking about
pretty
Bill.
It's crazy. I don't know. But, hey, guess what? When you're, I guess, later in life, you're trying to just have fun, I guess. Hey.
Oh. You're not answering. Just answer.
Hey, if I was 70-something, I don't know. It's just,
and your girl was 24?
How many more years I got? I don't know. I'm trying to have fun.
Hey, he's living his best life.
Hey, I'm making multiple millions. Like, all right, let's go. Hey, I know a few people that date younger guys. Or girls, I'm sorry.
Or guys.
Right.
I'm right here.
Yeah, I know. Sorry. I said guy. I meant.
Yeah. But answer Curtis's question. He was big on the no distractions.
Yeah.
Did it surprise you to learn? Mm-hmm. That the New York Times reported that while you guys were holed up in the end zone motel before a game, that Bill would perhaps have Jordan visit him there.
Did we say New York Times?
Yes.
Have we fact-checked the New York Times?
No. All right. They never do.
Like, haven't we gone through a whole election where the New York Times is?
Yeah.
But you were just down in North Carolina with him.
You took
a photo with he and Steve.
Relationship
with those two, does it seem normal? Does everything seem copacetic?
I mean, listen, when you're an employer and an employee and you are...
Isn't it copacetic?
There's no T.
Really?
It's okay.
Copacetic?
It's fine. Yeah.
You added a T, but it's fine.
Listen, we're not playing Scrabble.
Right.
They always are with me.
You know, let's check the dictionary. Is that a word? They're trying, and at the end of the day, when you're Steve and you're, you know, coordinator, you're still trying to climb a ladder. He's trying to be a head coach, right? Like,
right.
He's trying to perform at a certain level. Now, it doesn't matter if it's with the Patriots or if it was with Washington or now it's with Carolina. He's got a long way to go, you know, in coaching. So I think for him, he's focused on doing well. The team is doing well. They have to,
right.
Especially for him, because he's not going to retire. Bill is closer to retirement in the next couple of years. What's Bill going to do? I don't know. But
yeah,
I could either see him having a successful year in college, and if he has an opportunity going back to the pros, which, you know, the one thing I would say when you look at college, and when you look and you watch a college team play, there might be one or two professional players on the team. So you're coaching a less talented roster, which is, to me, challenging, right? It's challenging, especially now with kids in there. We talked about this last time I was on the show, the NIL, and they're like, I am him and I am me and all this stuff. It's like, no, you're not even going to play in the league. So, you know, look for a job.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to be looking for.
You said Steve wants to be a coach, and I think that absolutely is true. Do you think that Bill Belichick still has part of the hope alive that a successful stint in North Carolina will get him back to the NFL, or do you think he's basically...
I was surprised that he didn't have an opportunity. I mean, I don't know who the interview process was, who was in, who was out with him going back to the NFL.
Right.
I was shocked that he didn't isn't coaching,
right.
And he's coaching college right now. But
yeah,
certain people want different challenges, so maybe that's a different challenge for him.
Curtis brought this up earlier, and it's worth delving into. CBS ranked the college coaches football-wise for this upcoming season, and they have Bill ranked 54th.
Yeah, there was a CBS Sports Power Coach Rankings, and Bill Belichick was 54th on the list.
Is that surprising to you?
It is surprising.
It's shocking
to me. It's also you're having to coach the group of guys that you have on a roster. So
right.
unlike, you know, if Bill was the head coach in Alabama or any, he'd be number one, right? Because they have the more powerful, more talented roster, and he's having to build that roster up. And hopefully, I didn't know this, but the Big Ten, I guess they have to cut down scholarship
to 105.
Yeah. So if you're Carolina and you get to go up, so like certain schools have scholarships to fill and other schools have to cut, you're looking at like Ohio State, Michigan, all these big schools, and you're trying to get some of these guys that they have to let go to come onto your program.
Yeah, because the new limit now is 105. Yeah. And
they had like 115.
It was 115, but generally those guys were walk-ons. But now they can give up to 105 scholarships, but some teams are still carrying a little bit less. You were down there with them, and it's going to be interesting for me. I'm so fascinated to watch Bill this year because I want to know how does his coaching style translate to young kids who are just don't have a football IQ. You know, when you're in the league and your football IQ and Bill wants you to do this and situational football and you're coaching that and you got to know every moving part of the game. What's his coaching style like now? Is he still that?
I would say that he's similar in a sense of situational stuff, the situational awareness, trying to teach these kids how to understand parts of the game that they really don't understand. And I didn't understand football until I got here. Really.
Right.
You know, I was just athletic and see ball, get ball. You know, I was like a golden retriever and a tennis ball. Like go get the ball, right? And then when I got here, Bill's like, all right, listen, like we got to change a few things on how you're playing. You can't be past the quarterback. You got to understand down a distance. You got to know the formations. You got to know eye near, eye far, split back, and gun, all this stuff.
And that's that stuff you didn't learn.
I didn't learn.
In New Orleans or Miami or
Purdue.
Honestly, in Purdue's it's like Ivy League, basically.
It's the Ivy of the Central of
That's right. It's an Ivy League public school. You know, for me, it's football super, especially defense. If you're a 4-3 defensive end, it's pretty simple, right? You have your zone blitzing, you have your gap schemes, that's it. So when I arrived to New England, I was like, wow, hopefully I can get this. Because I was dropping when I was rushing, and I was rushing when I should be dropping. So it was like a challenge to understand the whole thing. But the defense and the way that he's approaching the college is definitely not as advanced as far as like the scheme. And
so he's kind of like, you know, watering it down.
Yeah,
like,
instead of having like 12 packages of groupings, and they might have five.
Well, and that's the bigger thing, because I think you hit the nail right on the head. Like, when you get to the league, you got to understand, from a defensive perspective, you got to understand offensive formation.
Yeah.
And vice versa, as an offensive guy, you got to understand defensive formations, find safeties, coverages, look at corners. So for these young kids and you don't get that at any college level.
Yeah.
I wonder how Bill stopped. That's why I'm so fascinated to watch him coach, because how does his style change, because he knows they don't have that mental capacity yet to be able to retain all that stuff. Like, he's been coaching for 50 years or six guys in the NFL. When you're coaching Lawrence Taylor, or you're coaching Ninkovich, or you're coaching Willie McGinnis, it's much easier than when you're coaching some kid who just came from high school, or some kid who transferred from
which is
school.
Why coaching Brockton was harder than the Patriots job.
Very hard, high school kids. Hey, because
are the Pats back?
Those are fighting words right there.
Are the Pats back?
Throw them in the river right now.
I can't. They'll sue me.
I will not sue you.
Talk about chin. We were talking about on the ride, and I was listening, and somebody says something to you. You want to give him a little smack?
Yeah, a little chin check.
Let's get Jay Miller to give him a smack.
There you go. Where's Jay?
Jay, I think he took off, but he's the guy that.
Hey,
I lied. I do have an attorney.
Stand in front of Jay. He's going to take care of it.
Yeah.
See you later.
That would stop all commenting on all social media. What was your question?
Are the Pats back, Nick?
Maybe. Listen, if you spend $355 million, you're hoping that, I don't know, maybe 200 of it works, right? Because it's not all going to work. If it all works, they're back.
Right.
Right? When you pay a ton of money in free agency, which they did, you don't know. You don't know how that's going to work out. Because what's that song?
Don't know what you got till it's gone.
Get my money
Hangover.
Kanye West.
Yes.
Canceled. But.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Sorry.
Still got good music, though. His music's good.
It's still a good song right there.
When it comes to OTAs, there are reports saying that this is a completely different situation than what Bill had. They're harder. They look like they're faster.
They're harder?
Yes.
Wow.
Pause.
Stronger?
Pause. The practices are harder.
Oh, okay.
So when it comes to Vrabel, do you think that that's going to be...
I mean...
effective?
We'll find out, because listen, like, at the end of the day, it's the OTAs. Yeah, shells on. It's like, oh, they won a one-on-one. If I practiced every day in an OTA, I would have played 0 years in the NFL. So it's just a good correlation between what OTAs, padded practices mean towards actual, like, how the team looks. There's no pads on. You're not hitting any each other. Like, you know guys that you've seen guys in shells. You're like, wow, that guy is a stud.
Yep.
You put pads on and he sucks. So that's just the way football is. If I would say if I was a young player right now in the league and the way the rules are, I probably wouldn't make a roster. Because I needed padded practices to beat up guys that look terrible in pads. And then people are like, wow.
That's interesting.
Yes.
So when it is breathlessly reported that Drake May had four interceptions and the hitch is back,
it makes me roll my eyes and say, who's the source? You know, some Mickey Mouse guy that played high school football.
He threw four interceptions in the first OTA practice, everybody.
Like,
his hitch is back.
Hey, that's Shime. He's right there. Don't talk.
Sorry. Sorry.
So that none of it. Hey,
it makes me want to. That would be bullying then.
No, that's when you get Jay Miller. You get Jay
Miller. Right. Like, hey,
outsource it.
Hang him up by his underwear.
Doesn't matter.
It's just like, okay, it's OTAs. And also, people don't realize that plays are scripted against certain plays to make the quarterback possibly throw an interception. Like, hey, okay, we're going to run this over sail route and to cover three, and we're going to make sure that he's having to run this play in a defense that is really hard to make it work.
Nick, where do you stand on the biggest controversial topic of the week at the owners' meetings? The push.
Yeah, it's so stupid. You know, like,
stupid to ban or stupid to allow?
Put flags on them if you don't want them to get hurt. You know, like, it's a play that is very successful.
But
it's hard to stop defensively. Great.
But my thing is this, though, and I've been waiting to
hold
ask
on.
You.
Listen, what I would do
okay.
is I would have everybody pinch. I would have a tight pinch.
Right.
Put two backers in the A gaps, and wherever the quarterback goes, I'd try and knock him out.
Well, the only thing I was saying, why can't the defense, the linebackers, push the D line?
No, I would have the linebacker standing right behind, and wherever the quarterback goes, left or right, I'd put my helmet on his head.
Right.
I'd try to make
I get that, but the thing that I look at it, because I'm against it in the sense that I feel like
now comes the back pedal.
No, there's no back pedal. I'm against it because I feel like the defense is at a disadvantage because the linebackers can't push the defensive lineman. And no matter, you know how it is. If you're going against somebody and there's somebody pushing that guy.
I want to tell you a crazy story, right?
All right.
My first year playing football, I was in third grade, right?
Okay.
I was a little bit chunky, so they put me in a garbage bag.
You look good now.
They made me run, and I had to lose 10 pounds, right? So I'd run around the field with a garbage bag on. Imagine in 2025, people, oh my God,
sue them.
But they had this cage where running backs would go into, right? And they would put an offensive guy and a defensive lineman in the cage. It was really low. And if you got too high, it was steel. You'd hit your head. They'd have a coach behind each player. And they would shove each other into each other. Bang! Now imagine
this
that.
Is third graders.
Oh, yeah.
They're shoving them into
just
each other.
Yeah. Boom! Yeah. And you'd be like, oh, my God.
How was school
what
today,
happened?
Honey? I got CTE.
And then, I couldn't pass math. So I blame it on that.
Wiggy's issue is that it's unfair.
Yeah.
When it comes to the D, because they cannot do the same thing.
The D linemen. They can't push. You could put two guys behind Jalen Hurts and push him, but you can't put nobody behind a defensive tackle and push those guys.
I'd try to figure it out. I'd have my nose either take the ankles out of the line, like dive to their ankles, try and make a pile, and then have linebackers come up top and clean it up. But for me, if the offense has an advantage and it's a clear advantage – I like that. Like, defensively, it's like, okay, how do we stop this?
Right. Bill wouldn't look to ban the rule. He'd say, let's stop it.
No, it's part of the game
right
now. And so there's always going to be something that comes up that either side takes advantage of. Like, do you remember in the playoffs where we had, you know, who man come in
and
unbalanced
and
the Ravens were freaking out because they thought it was an illegal formation? We ran it three times in a row. They were wide open. Well, they wanted to ban something like that.
But see,
because of the way they reported was supposed to be – like
that was the cause of Deflategate because
into Deflategate.
No, but
listen,
Brady said no the rule book. John Harbaugh alerted the Colts, and that's why we have.
Let me tell you a quick story about ball pressure. Okay, so my 9-year-old's in the championship next weekend. We're playing in the championship flag football championships, right? So this past weekend we're playing in a game, and the other team was complaining that our ball was a little too soft. Right?
Are you serious?
Yeah, 9-year-olds?
Yeah. Oh
yes.
No.
So I said, okay, take bring your own ball in, whatever. So at the end of the game, they had a big play. The kid dropped it. And he yells, like, the ball's too hard. I start dying. Like, I'm like, see, hey, if you just would have had the softer football, you maybe caught it, you know? It's like, oh, my goodness.
I cannot
goodness.
Believe that you got a ball, a PSI complaint.
What, the ball measure?
With a bunch of
nine-year-olds.
That's
oh, yeah.
It. Oh, God.
He played for the Patriots. They're taking air out of the
They're
ball.
They're cheating.
What a loser.
How many more wins you expect from them this season?
Oh, well, they have four last year?
Yeah. Last 2 years.
They bought four more, so let's say 8 to 10.
Okay.
You know, right. Depending on the scheduling. I know the schedule just came out, but, you know, for me, you have to have – I've said this year after year. You have to have realistic expectations. I know you have the Patriot fan out there that's eager to get back to the playoffs. They're like, they're a wild card team now, and they're going to win one.
Yeah.
It's like, let's just see how the offensive line shapes up. I like the first-round pick. You know, I love the one-word analogy of nasty.
Yeah.
Like, you know, explain to us in one word, how would you describe your game? Nasty.
All right.
I'm here to protect my quarterback. Like, it's just that.
You like him.
I like that.
He's
I like
country.
Even though they say, yeah, he's a little country, yeah. Southern boy. Yeah. But I you look at just the way that they kind of went about the free agency. I like who they picked up. That Moses guy is a good, really good football player. When I played against him, which is dating him,
mm-hmm.
when he was with the Commanders, he was a good player. And we talked after the game, and I respect him. He's a really good football player. So yeah. Hopefully he's a guy that a young player can attach himself to and kind of learn from. You know, how do you go about being successful?
Yeah, Campbell said he's working with him every day after practice.
Have you heard from Mayo at all?
I talked to him a couple weeks ago.
He's been, you know.
Listen, when you're a coach, you're absent from a lot of things that you wish you could be involved in. So now I think he's present, which is great. You know, so he's doing a lot of stuff with his children. And, you know. You can't, that's one thing you can't get back. It's time. So hopefully he's investing a lot of time in the kids right now, which I think he is.
If I were him, I'd be like, where was this staff? Where was this spending when I got the job, Robert?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's unfortunately part of the football journey that we all go through.
Right.
You know?
Really screwed you over because you were counting on a gig over there.
No, you know, I think I'm going to take your job. Seems pretty easy. Where's the next read?
You can have it. You can have it. All right. Round of applause for the great Rob Ninkovich.
See you guys.
Thanks, Rob.
You're the best.
Take care.
Thanks for coming down here.
Hey, that's that Breakfast of Champions right there.
That is.
Skull, a blueberry muffin, and coffee.
And a couple
of coffees.
Right.
That's all we need.
Perfect.
All right,
keep
Rob,
going.
Rob Ninkovich, we are at the Lobster Trap in Bourne. It is roadshow number 2. And Roadshow is brought to you by Miller Lite. It is Miller Time New England by Harbor One Bank. When it comes to business, they know business like nobody's business by Absolute Ocean Spray Vodka Cranberry Sparkling Cocktails, because some collaborations are just destined to be, and by Land Rover Norwood, where everything is different. And brought to you here on the Cape locally by Shepley Wood Products, by Nauset Disposal, by Copeland Chevrolet Subaru, and by the Cape Cod Regional Transit Authority. And we'll be joined coming up at 9 by Slane, and we'll talk a little bit movies. We'll talk a little bit of music with Slane. All of that still to come on Roadshow number 2 on the Cape here at WEEI.
Who had a worse day yesterday, Keith? Shime or Drake May?
Probably still Shime.
Okay.
Yeah.
How close was Drake May?
Drake May threw several picks.
Right around there.
Drake May threw several picks. I don't know if he was talking as big a game as Shime, though, so that's why I'd probably have to lean Shime, who I'm a big fan of. I know his stock right now is low.
No, buy the dip. I told you this yesterday. Buy the dip.
No, I already own it. I'm taking a bath right now is the problem. I can't unload it. I just gotta hold on to it for a while. But Drake May, not particularly sharp. And you can say, well, you know, he's going up against one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. That's a positive spin.
You could.
Christian Gonzalez is one of the best. Drake May, because it's one of those guys, and you and I are obviously high on Drake May. We did the freaking glitter guns, for God's sakes, when he got named the starter.
Yeah.
But there is a big group of people, I feel like, that just assume he's going to be a great quarterback. And we haven't really seen it yet. We've seen flashes of it. But how many guys that started last year could you pick out some highlights and be like, look at that. That looks pretty good. Probably all of them. They're NFL quarterbacks.
You could do it with Caleb Williams, who had a horrible year last year. Yeah.
And Caleb Williams, even like his stats at the end of the year didn't even look that bad. But when you watch some of the Bears games, like, he stinks.
Watch him against the Pats. Drake May looked 10 times better than him. And you could pick out highlights and pick out stats and talk him up.
He had like that, was it the London or Germany game? He had the international game where he was like, couldn't miss. He was great. But, yeah, what's it going to look like? Is he going to be able to be a consistent kind of winning quarterback? That still remains to be seen. I think it's right now it's everybody's best guess.
So, in case you're unaware, we talked about this very, very late in the show. This all came out right before we got off the air yesterday. Patriots OTAs, it's passing camp, basically, which is not as important as mini camp, which is not as important as training camp or preseason games or obviously regular season games. This isn't the Super Bowl. We all know that. But it is a chance to get a look at how Drake May was going to play. And if he lit it up yesterday, you know what you'd all be doing. You'd be going Super Bowl, 10, 11 wins, 13 wins. Like, you guys would be talking crazy about Drake May if he went out and lit it up. And I think we're already pretty bullish on the Patriots in May. But then you see the numbers yesterday. 11 out of 16, which is good. Four picks.
Oh.
Not so good. And just for some context, Josh Dobbs yesterday, zero picks. Ben Woolridge? Who?
Oh, it's Ben Woolridge.
Is that right?
Logan Woolridge.
I said Ben. I'm not actually. No, you're thinking of Logan Woodside.
I am thinking of Logan Woodside.
I believe it's Ben Woolridge. I said it. I'm not overly confident. No picks yesterday.
Yeah, Ben Woolridge.
So Drake May was the only guy out there throwing picks.
Right.
He threw them either in a 6 or 7 throw span. I've seen different reports. Bedard said 7 throws. Callahan said 6.
It was all early in the session.
It was all in a quick session where he threw 4 interceptions yesterday. And people will say it's just one day at OTAs. That's so false. He turned it over a ton in real NFL games last year.
Oh, yeah.
A ton. He had 10 interceptions last year. He had 4 fumbles, 2 lost. So turnovers were an issue for him a year ago in his rookie year. They lost the Patriots games. I mean, for as brilliant as he was at the end of that Tennessee game, the pop fly interception he threw in overtime lost them that game. So turnovers were a problem a year ago. They were a problem yesterday. Anyone who says it's just one day at OTAs technically is right, but it's a continuation of what we saw last year. And Keefe, on top of that, you have him in a new offense with a new offensive coordinator in Josh McDaniels, and you wonder how that transition is going to go. So we say all that to say this, and you guys can climb aboard, 617-779-7937. That's your phone number and your text line for Jones and Keefe. You can interact on Twitter and Instagram, at Jones and Keefe. Watch along and chat, twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. Always a very healthy chat going on there yesterday, especially
for sure, yeah,
for Scheim and Greg at the match. Just nothing but
positive reinforcement.
Positivity and, you know, pump up comments.
Yeah, that's nice.
You can also watch on YouTube. Just subscribe to WEEI. Are there reasons for concern with Drake May? And are we just expecting too much out of Drake May and not really paying attention to some of the issues he already had a year ago?
Yeah, I mean, last year he won one game basically as a starter. And I think there were a million excuses, and I would make them as well. I would be like, the offensive line's trash, the receivers are trash, the head coach is trash, the offensive coordinator is really a quarterback's coach. Like, he had a lot working against him.
He did.
So it was, I think, fair to lay out all those excuses. This year, it seems like, I wouldn't say they completely cleaned up everything, but they improved everything. So even if you don't think this is a world-class offensive line, it's better. The receiving corps, same thing. It's better.
Yeah.
Offensive coordinator is better. The head coach, better. So everything around him is better.
And the other side of the ball should be head and shoulders better. Defense.
And I've also always maintained that the quarterback is the most important and the highest paid for a reason. Well, eventually will be the highest paid in his case. And they need to lift the play of everybody else around him too. So I can't, on the one hand, make fun of Brock Purdy for being a guy that has all this great stuff around him, and it's more the guys around him, and, you know, not sort of say that guy should be the one that raises the level of play. I think there are 2-3 spots in the league where almost any quarterback would be good. Every other place, the quarterback's the one that needs to sort of lead that team, carry that team forward, and that's what they need Drake May to be. You know, I'm not worried after one OTA practice. However, I don't think we certainly know for sure. I don't think we know what he's going to be. Like, last year's rookies, I think Washington probably feels pretty good about Jaden Daniels because they saw it on a week-in and week-out basis. I think how Chicago fans feel about Caleb Williams is probably similar to how Patriots fans should feel about Drake May.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, there's still a lot of potential. Saw flashes of it during the season, but also saw flashes of the other thing where you're like, oh, this could slip away. So I still feel like, that, you know, they have their obvious starter, but we really don't know what he's going to be yet in the league.
So, no, I agree with all that. And no one's saying he's a bust because of one day at OTAs.
No, right.
But
and also thank you. You can thank the Celtics and the Bruins not being in the playoffs for why we're with Drake May OTAs.
I mean, look, I we would have gotten to it either way. But you're right. If there was a Celtics playoff game last night, we wouldn't be probably starting here. Right. That's fair. Same thing with the Bruins. But already, and you're right, there is a bigger, more sizable, critical group of Drake May than,
there is
than
not,
it feels.
It is not a unanimous, he's going to be great crowd.
Here you go. 617-779-7937. That's your text line. Drake May, I told you he's a bum. Tim from Brockton.
Well, I'm not saying he's a bum.
Drake May sucks. Don't come at me with playbooks and coaches.
Well, it is the second coach. It is the second playbook. I mean, that's something.
I think if you want to be charitable to Drake May, you say, yeah, he's learning a new offense, and he was making some mistakes yesterday. Now, Ben Woolridge has never played in the NFL, and he wasn't throwing four picks yesterday. Wasn't throwing any picks yesterday.
Was he throwing against Christian Gonzalez?
Yeah, well, fair point. Who was he throwing?
Ben Woolridge
was
probably
to? I don't know.
I would imagine not.
Dobbs hasn't been in the McDaniels offense, right? He didn't have any picks yesterday.
No.
He played for Vrabel. I don't think he's been in the McDaniels offense.
Well, he is the Pastrnak, so.
It's true.
Yeah.
Stud. I like this one too, Keith. We don't really know how good Drake May is going to be, but hey, let's go ahead and trade Joe Milton.
Yeah, if you want to bring that up, go ahead.
The Joe Milton people are out there as well. So, look, I don't think he's a bust by any means. I still strongly believe in him, but this is going to be a big year for him to go out and clean up the turnovers.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big year for him to actually win games. He doesn't need to go to the Pro Bowl again. He doesn't need to, I think, you know, even make the playoffs necessarily.
I forgot about the Pro Bowl thing.
To feel good. He's like eighth alternate.
Well, like Mac Jones.
Yes.
Also a Pro Bowler.
What he needs to do is, you know, clean up the turnovers, which were bad a year ago, which is why yesterday should be a concern. The word Karen Garigian used at Mass Live today is it was scary yesterday watching how he performed. So I don't know if you think that's too strong or not. On the heels of what he did a year ago, you got to clean up the turnovers and you got to start winning games. You're right to say this, Keith. He basically won a game last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. He was credited with three wins. He basically won one against the Bears, and that was a game where the defense dominated. That's his one true win last year. So you got to start winning games. You got to clean up the turnovers, and he's on the clock to do that. No one's calling him a bust. I don't think anybody rational, anyway, is calling him a bust. But he is going to be on the clock to fix those things. And yesterday didn't look like any progress made towards that. That's all.
And there's the year two jump, and it's one. Bill Belichick has always talked about that. There's not a bigger jump in the NFL for players than from their rookie year to their second year. And so does Drake May make that jump? And, you know, just like there's a million examples of rookie quarterbacks having success and those not, and, you know, second-year guys, there's plenty of examples of guys getting a new offensive coordinator or a new coach and really elevating their game, but then there's also ones where it kind of messes them up. So, like, we'll see which path he goes down. I think he is set up for more success this year than he was a year ago.
I agree.
But, I mean, to start the year, I don't look at him as, like, a top 10 quarterback in the NFL or anything like that. And I think if you do, that's you're way overestimating things. It's glass overflowing if you think he is. But does he have sort of the skill set to, by the end of the year, maybe be in that conversation? Sure, he definitely does, but I'm not putting him there now.
Oh, and I think there is a chance, as we said with the McDaniels offense, if he's adjusting to it now, that makes sense. I heard Hunter Henry talking yesterday after practice, like, yeah, the turnovers are concerning. You never want to see them, but we have a lot of time to work on stuff and fix stuff. But that is an acknowledgement that stuff needs to be worked on and stuff needs to be fixed, which, again, makes sense. New offense, new offensive coordinator, starting over again in year two. And I'd expect for growth throughout the course of the year, but he's going to have to do those things because, again, last year is not just a one-off day, way too sloppy with the football a year ago. And that was a criticism of him as well at the University of North Carolina. A bunch of texts as well. Oh, Peyton Manning turned it over a bunch as a rookie. Josh Allen turned it over a ton early. Yeah, those guys weren't exempt from criticism like that. Peyton Manning set a rookie record for interceptions. Yeah. We used to talk about Josh Allen like he was a joke until he started cleaning up the interceptions. So,
actually, did Josh Allen throw a lot of interceptions, or is he just not that accurate?
I thought there were picks and fumbles.
Yeah, was it both?
I think so, but maybe not.
His rookie year, he threw 12. His second year, he threw 9.
So 9's not a bad number. 12 in how many games?
12.
Yeah,
so he won a game. You know, but the next year, second year, where he still wasn't anointed as a great quarterback, he threw 9 picks in 16 games.
Remember that playoff game, though, against Houston?
Horrible. Yeah, it was horrible. I'm not saying he was great, and his accuracy was an issue, but I don't know. I also think comparing him to Peyton Manning is fine, but the league has also changed. Quarterback stats now are so much weighted. Like, QB rating back in the day, or you know, if you broke 90 was like amazing. Now it's like the whole league is over 90.
Yeah, or you threw for 4,000 yards. That used to mean something.
Set a record.
Now it's like basically every quarterback does it.
As long as you start.
Right. Know. So, yeah, those guys overcame the turnovers, but they had to overcome them. That's what we're saying with Drake May. He's got to do it. And yesterday was our first look at Drake May, and there was no progress made. In fact, it feels like a setback. I'm also not sure about the confidence in Mike Vrabel, Keith. Is Mike Vrabel a top 10 coach? Let me just ask that as a blanket statement. Do you feel like he's a top 10 coach in the NFL?
Without doing the actual breakdown 1 through 32, I would say no.
Okay. I don't think so either.
I don't think it's far from there. Like, that to play the semantic game. I bet if I did the exercise, he's probably 12. So, like, somewhere in there, 13.
Here's the reason I asked. Part of it was sparked by what Schrager said coming back. And part of it was I saw this making the rounds on social media yesterday. It's just a random coaching draft they did. I like a good draft. Greg Rosenthal, NFL.com. So here's their top 10. You tell me if you think Vrabel's better than some of these names, okay?
Yep.
Andy Reid.
I think he's better.
Sean McVay.
Better.
Dan Campbell.
Better. But there's something up there.
You've got to
give
Campbell the edge today.
Yeah.
But this year, by the end of the year, we might look at it and go, yeah, Campbell wasn't really that great. It was all Ben Johnson.
Right now, if you could swap the coaches, would you? Would in this particular situation, and I know that's a different question, but like, I don't know if I would swap him, but like, for the sake of this exercise, I'll say he's better.
I think
he's had a lot of success.
I think I would swap him, but we might talk about this very differently after this year. I acknowledge that.
Yeah.
Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah, oh, I love him.
Shanahan.
Yes.
Better. Shanahan's got issues, but he's a better coach.
He's got a ceiling, it seems like, but yeah, he's better.
John Harbaugh.
Yes, better.
Sean Payton.
No. I don't like Sean Payton.
You'll take Vrabel over Payton.
Yeah. I don't like Sean Payton.
Payton just went to the playoffs with a rookie quarterback drafted after Drake May.
Okay.
Well,
you got Bo Nix.
Okay.
Kidding me? I love Bo Nix.
Like, I don't love Bo Nix. Matt LaFleur.
Yeah, I think he wins a lot of games.
DeMeco Ryans.
So begrudgingly, yeah, he is. I mean, they had like a little step back, but they're still in the playoffs. So,
Tomlin, that's the top 10.
Tomlin.
Tomlin or Vrabel?
Tomlin.
Okay, so you don't like Peyton. You have questions about Campbell, so he's like 8 or 9 already.
Yeah.
Let's get further into it. Jim Harbaugh.
Oh, yeah, Jim Harbaugh, definitely.
Okay, Sean McDermott.
No.
I don't love McDermott. Don't you have to give McDermott over Vrabel?
No.
Just because he has Josh Allen?
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll.
Maybe at one point. I'd rather have Vrabel now than Pete.
Here are the other names before Vrabel. Tell me if you like any of them. Dan Quinn, Nick Sirianni, Kevin Stefanski, Mike McDaniel.
So, Dan Quinn, we talked about this last year in the playoffs. I remember I was shocked that Washington hired Dan Quinn over Bill Belichick. And then when you look back on it, you're like, well, Dan Quinn's done pretty well.
If you want to,
I think he's better.
If you want to crow about Mike Vrabel going to one AFC title game, Quinn's been to an NFC title game and a Super Bowl with different teams.
Yeah, I think you have to say Dan Quinn. You wouldn't normally think that, but if you really dig into it, I would say Dan Quinn. I thought Stefanski was a good coach. It's hard to properly figure out Stefanski
because of all the issues. He's a two-time coach of the year. Yeah. I would take Vrabel over Stefanski.
I would too. Yeah. I would too. But I think people would just dismiss him.
Sirianni.
So another one where I would probably say I'd rather have Vrabel than Sirianni, but the guy just won a Super Bowl.
Right. And the same thing you said about Dan Campbell. If you swapped him, would you?
So like Campbell, Sirianni, McDermott. Are they great coaches?
Sirianni won a Super Bowl by getting out of the way.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, A.J. Brown almost shoved him in a locker.
I don't really respect Sirianni.
I think I would
take
Vrabel over all those guys.
Yeah, I don't really respect Sirianni, but I feel like when you look at the two of them, you kind of have to give the edge to Sirianni.
Yeah.
I think I would take Vrabel over McDaniel. The whole McDaniel experience early on was kind of fun.
2 years ago, I would have taken McDaniel.
Yeah.
But now, I think, because the offense looked as bad as it did, I'm like losing a little bit of faith in McDaniel. I'd take Vrabel over him.
So we just went through all the different names.
What about Ben Johnson?
You didn't
mention him.
This list didn't have any rookie head coaches on there. Would you take Ben Johnson over him?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather have Ben Johnson.
I would have rather have hired Ben Johnson over him as well. Good point.
But we don't know. I guess we don't know if he's better. There's no track record there. But
so,
that's why I think he, like, 12 is fair. Like, he's in the top half. He's clearly in the top half of the league.
Yeah, I would say he's outside the top 10, but he's in the top 15.
Yep.
But when you're talking about bringing along Drake May and there's no better situation and it's perfect for him, let's just not go too far with that.
Well, no, because I specifically think just for Drake May, Kevin O'Connell, even Mike McDaniel maybe, but like all those offensive genius guys.
I mean, you hate
Ben
Peyton.
Johnson.
You hate Peyton, but Peyton.
Just for Drake May.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for the team, I'd rather have Vrabel, but for specifically Drake May, I think Sean Payton would probably get a better season out of him. So I think it is overstated to say there's no better situation. It's a good situation, and it's light years better than it was a year ago.
Way better than
but
a year ago.
You don't have to go to the next step to be like, no, nowhere else in football you'd rather be.
Shine, good one. Steppenwolf, right?
That is correct, Greg. Credit to a 508 texter for that one in honor of the Tush Push surviving another day.
Yes. Right. Tush Push survives.
Yeah.
An attempt to ban it. And there were, I believe, 22 teams in favor of the ban. It must be a three-quarter majority required. Is that the way that works, Curtis? You would know better than
24
I.
24 of 32 is required for okay. a change. Okay. So they were two votes short.
Man. I kind of agree with the owners because you can't do it on the defensive side of the football. And I'm an offensive guy. At least give the defense.
You're very offensive.
Yes. At least give the defense.
Shimes game, golf game. No, that's offensive.
Give the defense the same chance as the offense.
Can I get to 60 degree?
To push.
Sorry, back to football.
No, that's fine. Yeah. But no, it's a disadvantage for the defense because they don't get the linebackers don't get to push the D linemen. It's just all that force, and then those guys just drive low, and then once you got a couple like players behind pushing them or carrying them, So I kind of see what some of the owners are saying.
I Patriots, hate Philadelphia more than anything, but that the post that they put after the Tush Push failed to be banned, did you see it?
No.
It was just the picture, I think it said push on with the Eagles against the Packers running the play against them. So I thought that was well done.
I mean, Patriots under the leadership of Mike Vrabel were against the ban.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I like the attitude that if somebody figures out a way to be successful, then you got to figure out a way to beat them. So,
you don't just
cry and complain about the rules.
But if there's not the same advantage for the defense when it comes to this specific play, isn't that kind of unfair in the world of sports? Isn't the playing field supposed to be everybody can do the same thing?
Well, the whole reason they do this, Wiggy, is because their offensive line, they went big and strong, and the NFL has gotten smaller and more athletic. People are trying to find players that are more like Aaron Donald, mm-hmm. which is hard to find because he's so unique, instead of getting guys like Vince Wilfork or that undrafted kid out of Florida who are just massive bodies that can clog up the center of the defensive line. And so the Philadelphia Eagles have taken advantage of that, and teams need to adjust. And if you choose not to adjust on your roster, that's your fault. You need to learn to stop it.
But no, even if you have a big, you know, Ted Washington type of guy, once you get to pushing from behind, it doesn't matter how big he is. He's just the momentum of two guys versus one.
Yeah, but the point is, like, if you have a massive nose tackle that mm-hmm. can beat the center, you're going to win that. You're going to be able to win that battle at least a couple times.
Yeah, but the thing is, you'll never be able to beat the center because if you ever look at Philly, the way they're so low and they just kind of push out on it, if the linebacker had the ability to push that big 400-pound guy, that would be the same advantage for them. That's all I'm saying. I don't mind the tush push. Just give the defense and those linebackers the same ability to push on their defensive linemen like the offensive guys do. Yeah.
I will say I was upset that the Lions withdrew their reseeding mm-hmm. rule proposal because I thought there was some merit to that. Like, they mm-hmm. wanted to basically avoid a situation like, was it Seattle?
No,
that
like
got in that was seven wins a few years ago. Yeah.
They actually, I think, beat the Saints in that game that they were a 7-9 team at home. Mm-hmm. I think that was the Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, that was a Marshawn Lynch game. Yeah.
So they wanted to avoid that scenario where you reseed mm-hmm. based on wins.
Right.
Which I kind of like that, actually.
Yeah, no, I get that. Or even like last year where I think they ended up, 14-3, but Minnesota was just as good, and they're both in the same division, and now you're traveling to a team that might be 9-8 because they won their division. But I guess the way I look at that, because I'm kind of torn, if you win your division, that's always been like the bonus you get is you get one home game, you get a higher seed. You can't knock a team for being in a good division, or you can't penalize a team for being in a bad division. You know, like you said, when the Saints was 7-9 and got in the playoffs, well, their division stunk, so they were able to do that.
And this brings more credit, I think, to the Patriots at the beginning, where, like, every year, and it wasn't covered because people were trying to have the Patriots stop, but every year the Colts and others would create rules to make it more difficult for the Patriots to succeed, and yet they kept winning. Now the league literally has the refs playing for the Chiefs and doing everything to try and prop up that dynasty, and they can't really do it. I think it's just a good sort of parallel to draw.
Yeah.
So, I'm kind of torn on that one, though.
Rhode Island text, good morning and hello to those of you who listen to the show on our Rhode Island affiliate every morning. Thank you for that. We will be in Rhode Island next week for a pregame and a road show in Newport. But the texter says, agree with Wiggy, it is a rugby play and not a football play.
Right.
And it doesn't belong. We're talking about the tush push.
Right.
Doesn't belong in the NFL. So there are some who would agree that it does not
keep
belong.
Crying.
But it's a disadvantage, though, for the defense. It's just a disadvantage because they can't do the same thing. They can't push their D linemen.
Then so, why hasn't every NFL team offense wise done this, Wiggy? Why is it only the Eagles have done this successfully?
But I think if you look at the teams that do it successfully, you still have to have strong, like Jalen Hurts squats like 700 pounds.
Exactly. So they're taking advantage of their guys' attributes.
No, you're taking advantage of your quarterback being strong or big, and then you're putting two tight ends behind them to then push him forward, and the lineman's pushing out. So that force in general is just going to be hard to stop. Because on defense, you can't do that.
So you're saying it's a disadvantage for a team that doesn't have a quarterback like Jalen Hurts?
No, I'm saying it's a disadvantage for the defense because the defense, those D linemen are not getting pushed by the linebackers to kind of maybe stop that. You know what I mean? It's like if somebody's pushing a car and there's nobody in front of it to push it back, it's like you're going to be able to move that car forward. Now give the defense the opportunity to push the D lineman. I don't get why people don't see the disadvantage in that.
Well,
but Wiggy, why doesn't every team do it?
Because they can't.
Because they
watch the Bills get stuffed four times against the Chiefs.
Like if it's this easy cheat code.
Well, no, I didn't say it's an easy cheat code.
Well, you said it's an obvious clear advantage for the offense.
No, I said it's an advantage for the offense.
Then why doesn't every offense do it?
Because you still need the quarterback.
Exactly.
But you need the quarterback to have the ability
to
do it.
And so the Eagles have the right pieces to do it.
Right.
And so other teams are trying to punish them because they built something that you don't have.
Their quarterback has that skill.
Right.
That physical talent.
Right.
And so now they're just like, all right, we'll create a rule to ban it. It doesn't seem right to me.
Like I said, you don't have to ban it. Just give the defense the same opportunity.
Why wouldn't you ban the no huddle? Tom Brady was the best ever at it. It was a huge advantage for Tom Brady.
Because guess what? The defense doesn't have to huddle. You know what they did? You know the rule that they changed to make it equally fair for the defense? When
you can't substitute.
You can't substitute. Right.
So but if you keep your offense on the field.
No. If you keep the same position or the same if you keep the same personnel group out there, the defense they could substitute, but they don't have to. The referees don't have to wait.
Right.
Where so like they did that to help the defense. So I don't get why you can't do the same thing on the other side.
Chime. Let's get to our leads.
This is the Greg Hill Show. Time now for The Lead.
Chime, you stumped me. Who is that?
This is the band Muse with their biggest hit, Supermassive Black Hole.
Is that their biggest hit? Not really.
It's their most played song on Spotify.
It is?
Yes, it is.
I don't know if that always means it's the biggest hit.
That's fair. I guess if you're going by Billboard chart, which do they still do that nowadays?
Like, the Billboard chart?
Yeah. Is that still a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Top 100? Yeah, they still do that. Isn't Shaboozy been on there for like a year straight?
Yep.
Yeah.
Something crazy like that?
Well, you know, the longest can you name the longest album in the history of rock music to remain on the Billboard charts year after year after year?
AC/DC Back in Black.
No. Great guess.
Mm.
Can anybody name it?
Man.
Hanson. Mbop.
See if anybody in the Twitch chat can get it. Morning and hello to those who are watching the show on Twitch or on YouTube.
Green Day Dookie.
No. This show
is brought to you on Twitch by Springer's Jewelers. If you need a diamond, go see Springer's. Go to tax-free Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and get a diamond. Oh, yeah, they nailed it in the, it looks like, I can't read, X-Flash 84X.
Is it a Bon Jovi song, album?
No, it's a Pink Floyd album.
Oh, wow. Mm.
Dark Side of the Moon. Mm. It was on the Billboard charts for years. It may still be on there.
Wow.
Curtis, you could do what LB would always tell you to do and Google it. By the way, just thinking of our guy LB.
Google it.
Who has been in the hospital for quite some time. I don't know. I talked to him day before yesterday and just wanted to share thoughts and well wishes for our guy LB.
Get well soon, brother.
Thinking about him.
Yeah, so,
I'm sorry.
All right, your lead this. Oh, leads brought to you by Subaru. Let love bloom in a brand new 2025 Subaru. Find your authorized Subaru retailer at SubaruofNewEngland.com. Your lead this morning, Shime?
Yeah, Greg, good morning. Non-sports lead from me today. Actually, you could probably take a wild guess at what my lead is going to be about because I need to put in a request ahead of time. I'm going to need a flex day on this day in exactly 1 year from now because for the first time ever, Chicago's Field Museum will host a Pokemon fossil exhibit.
No.
They do this in Japan. They have a special fossil exhibit where you can see the fossils of specific fossil Pokemon alongside fossils of real-life dinosaurs. And for the first time, it's going to leave Japan and go to Chicago's Field Museum on May 22nd of 2026. Uh-huh. So I just want to put it in ahead of time, giving plenty of time for reference. Uh-huh. I'm going to be probably out that day. I'm going to fly to Chicago. I'm going to go visit the museum, and I'm going to enjoy myself.
Wow.
Will, can you explain to me these are Pokemon something. What they look like fossils?
In Pokemon lore, there are specific Pokemon like dinosaurs that are extinct and only exist in fossils.
Everyone knows that.
Yes. And but in the Pokemon world, they devised almost like Jurassic Park a way to bring those fossil Pokemon back to life.
Okay.
And so they will have.
How could something that was never alive come back to life?
No, Curtis, it was alive. That's the whole point. It's a fictional world. Get with it. Mm-hmm. And so they have those fossils of the fossil Pokemon, for example, like Kabutops or Tyrantrum.
Right.
And they will put Tyrantrum up against a T-Rex because they look similar.
Right.
And you can kind of see the differences.
I see.
All
right. And how long will you spend in the museum when you visit the museum?
The entire day. I will be there. I will acquire any and all Pokemon fossil merch that they want to sell. I would be happy to be a tour guide. I'll explain every single fossil Pokemon there is. I have no problem with that.
Okay.
I'll do it free of charge too.
That you should do. That I'm fine with. You know your stuff. Golf, give that hobby up. Go balls deep into the Pokemon and stay there.
Yeah.
That is your lane, Chime. You're doing a tremendous job, but the golf thing, you might want to just kind of give that up.
How are you going to get there since we learned the other day that you can't drive? Okay.
I'll fly, thank you.
We will take a quick break and get to the rest of this morning's leads coming up next.
WEEI Afternoons with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
That was Chris Gasper breaking down the OTA day that Drake May had yesterday in Foxborough. WEEI Afternoons broadcasting live from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studios. Brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and F-Series. Hurry in to get employee pricing on the full lineup of vehicles. Ford, from America, for America. Do we take that? So there were four interceptions yesterday. There was some bad throws. There were some sacks taken. That's where a lot of the notebooks and the blogs and everything focus their attention. So is that, Ted Johnson, is that an acceptable excuse the first time the media saw Drake May to see him maybe processing and struggling early on in the Josh McDaniels offense?
Yes, because that was the excuse I gave yesterday's show. So I got to back my play.
Wait, I thought you didn't allow excuses.
You're right. It runs counter to a lot of my core principles. But for this one thing, I will grant a little bit of leeway to Drake May. I think there is some some truth to that. Just to put a, you know, and I, part of me, and I don't know, we'll see what my 3-point stance will be tomorrow. But part of me, I mean, listening to myself, I was listening, going driving home, and I was like, man, I sure made a lot of excuses for Drake May. And I hear other people do as well.
Yeah.
And I have a hard time just letting the thought of what is, I think, in the minds of a lot of Patriots fans, you guys, is that maybe he's not a franchise quarterback. It's hard for me. I mean, you hear about the interceptions, and then did you hear about the pass he threw to Javon Baker in yesterday's practice? The back shoulder beauty down mm-hmm. the right side, Andy?
Uh-huh.
And you go, I can't square up seeing him make these brilliant plays along with these other bad plays and just think that he's going to be a bad quarterback. I think he has this potential because you see these brilliant plays, and so that's kind of what I lean into. But I think early on, initially, I think there's some I think it's okay to give him a little bit of a pass based on the system. And I was listening to Gasper last night on Boston BST, and he was basically saying that they are not trimming down any of the system. Like, it's not kind of a you know, we're going to take it slow. I guess he's thrown the entire book at him. And so that might explain some of maybe some of the bad decisions. So I wish they did. I wish they did trim the playbook at least a little bit. But according to Hunter Henry, who spoke about this yesterday, and some people that Gasper talked to, they have not trimmed the offensive playbook down for Drake May. And that might be why you saw the performance you saw in yesterday's practice.
Yeah, I'd say you cut him now. Just get as quick as you can. Start getting the Pastrnak up to speed. See if Dallas can undo the Joe Milton trade or if they'll take a fourth back for him. I mean, come on. The overreaction. Andy, I understand. Not coming from our show, but just wherever people have to, like, get their clicks, engage the audience, et cetera, et cetera. Is it a cause for a little concern? Maybe. If we're going to do this on a 1 to 10 concern scale, I'll give it a 1. Maybe a 1.5, but we've heard
it is 4 interceptions and 5 in
4 out of 8
pass attempts.
Yeah, like, I know, but it's also May 20th.
It's bad.
It's terrible, but it's also May 20th. And the Josh McDaniels book might be an awful lot for him, even though Josh supposedly went on this college football infused mm-hmm. spiritual journey, and he's going to come to Josh the same way Drake needs to come to him. There are an awful lot of new parts gelling, which I believe even you may have pointed out previously, Dan Ball. Like, it's hard to pick them for 10, 11, 12 wins when you have this many new elements. Even though Josh McDaniels is very familiar, and we see Mike Vrabel and we think, oh, Ted Johnson, Tom Brady, Super Bowls. Like, there's a lot coming together. So let's give it a chance to, I don't know, learn and then acclimate, and then it'll coalesce. But the talent is there. Come on now.
I would also throw in real quick for you guys that you didn't have Stephon Diggs there yesterday. He was not a participant, and I know it's a pie in the sky comparison, but the Drake May Josh Allen early year comp was made last year, and Stephon Diggs was a huge part being the security blanket to kind of work out some of those interception issues. So again, it's day 2 of OTAs, but I think it's worth noting that you didn't have your supposed number one receiver there either.
And also,
go ahead, Andy, go.
The relationship with Brian Daboll was a big part of the evolution of Josh Allen, and this is Josh McDaniels a month into whatever that relationship is going to be with Drake May in terms of harnessing the good and you know, getting him. I think right now Josh's biggest goal is probably to get him to succeed on the easy stuff. Drake, I know you can do the hard stuff. I know you can roll right, throw left, roll right, drop it in the bucket down the sideline. I know you can do the hard stuff. I need you to prove to me that 9 times out of 10, you can do the easy stuff, that you can take Hunter Henry over the middle, that you can take Pop Douglas on a quick developing route and just make the easy throw. And I'm guessing that's what he's kind of beating into his head right now.
Yeah, I would think so. But then you kind of read, 2 of the pass attempts were to Travion Henderson. So I was about to say, hey, yep, take just the check down. Well, wait a minute. I mean, throw 2 interceptions to the running back? Well, yes. He threw a pick on a check down. That's
you don't see that often. You don't see that too often.
You don't. And I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna frame it this way. Does it make anybody feel better if I put it to you this way? So started off first 8 pass attempts, 4 interceptions. The last 8 pass attempts, I think it was 7 for 8. He finished strong, and I will say this, to me that's the mark of a great quarterback. I remember when Peyton got into the league early in 1998, and he would throw 3 interceptions in the first half.
Yep.
You'd be like, toast, the second half. He comes out and he throws four touchdowns in the second half. It's if you can let go of your mistakes and not let them affect you, that to me is the mark of a really good quarterback. And so I like that he finished the practice strong after getting off to a bad start. He didn't let his mistakes, you know, affect the second part. So that's something to, from a positive perspective, to pull back.
Yeah, and also can we also perhaps maybe tip our cap to, or in that positive side of things, like, oh, maybe this Christian Gonzalez is even better than we thought. I mean, he picked out two of the four, Ted. Mm-hmm. So, you know, let's give the defense their props. I mean, it wasn't like he was like, Drake wasn't supposedly, did anyone say like Drake was running around with the ball? Like, what do I do with this? Like, it was like, people can read his body. Like, these are all, and this is, don't you want them to be like worked down now so that you can teach them up? Like, they've got 4 months almost till kickoff, 3.5 months till kickoff. Like, now is when you want them throwing 4, 5, 6. I don't care how many picks. Like, you have to have teachable.
You don't ever want him throwing four or five picks. Yeah. No, like, he's okay, not a freshman quarterback who's putting on pads for the first time. Like, he's an NFL franchise quarterback who went number 3 overall in the draft. There should be a certain level of competency that you expect any time he takes the field. My positive spin fits.
All right, then he's a bum.
No, he's not a bum. And the best part of it is,
kill him, get rid of him.
I had no reports yesterday of him punching himself in the thigh or freaking out or doing any of the dumb Mac Jones self-flagellation wound too tight. I don't think that is going to be an issue. I've actually had people, you know how we made the comparison to the Gronkowskis with his family and his brothers and him? I've actually had people that have had internal interactions with him at Gillette that have told me, yeah, there's definitely a little Gronk to him. He's a little bit of a Gronk-like version of a quarterback, and they meant it in a good way in terms of his mindset and his mentality and some of the work ethic and different things. And if you tell me that, if he is the Gronk of quarterbacks, I think we're going to be A-OK in a few months. I think that is going to go in the right direction. But we also do have to acknowledge,
high praise.
We also do have to acknowledge, like Brett Norton in the Twitch chat says, it's May 20th. Yeah, and they practiced on May 19th and May 20th, and we have to talk about it. That is actually the information we have at hand. And then when it's June 9th and they're in mini camp, we'll talk about that. And then when it's August 7th and they're playing preseason games, we'll talk about that. That's how this business works. We assess the information at hand. There were a couple other things that I found notable coming out of the notebooks. Did you guys take any note, think of anything? I saw that Cole Strange was taking right guard reps. He'd been a left guard here. Ted, you tell me. Is that nothing? Is it a big, like, he was a left guard, then he was a center, now he's a right guard. What are we doing with Cole Strange?
I think it's more of an indictment on Mike Onwenu. Did Mike Onwenu come in overweight? How does he look? Does he look like he's ready to go? There was a little bit of that last year. I read one support that might be the case again this year, that he didn't look like he came in, in the shape that you need to be. That maybe was a signal to the coaches, and so that might be the reason you're seeing Cole Strange playing more some right guard. He's also played left guard, so he's going both sides. He's playing left and right. So to see him at right makes me think that maybe, just maybe, that they're not totally happy and satisfied. Because let's face it, Mike Onwenu signed a big monster deal last year, and he didn't even come close to living up to that deal last year. And so maybe that's just their way. They need to create competition. I mean, and honestly, Cole Strange is a former first-round draft pick. Say what you will about him. Like, he didn't perform the way maybe you wanted, but he's still, nonetheless, a first-round draft pick. And so they need to create competition. And if that lights a fire under Mike's butt to maybe come into camp a little bit better in shape, then so be it. I think that's what that kind of explains, Andy.
And then the other one that stuck out to me that I don't love, because I think we all think the defense is going to be pretty good. They got two corners that are going to be pretty good, two defensive tackles that are going to be
pretty good.
The safety position is one that I think we have an eye on, and Marte Mapu not practicing. For a guy who's supposedly this, like, freakish, versatile athlete, is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? Well, I'll tell you what he is. He's a guy who's never on the field to start the off-season workouts and things of that, and you can't make the club from the tub, Ted.
No, you can't, and this guy came in with a lot of fanfare for a third-round draft pick. No disrespect. I mean, I think he went to a small school, right? I think he's from San Jose, So, which, whatever, it doesn't mean he can't play in the NFL. But all this fanfare and how smart he is, I have yet to see him live up to even close to what he came in. I mean, he even when he was in there last year, he just seems undersized. And I'm not sure, what is he? Is he a linebacker? Is he a safety? Is he a strong safety? Is he a free safety? I think we can all say he's not a free safety, but I didn't see the his coverage skills really on display last year. And I think he's a little undersized to think that you can put him in the box, play in and play out too. So, yeah, that guy, look, I don't think they're going to miss too much. I think they do have a plethora of safeties. I do like their safety position. So I just think there's other guys that are better than him at this point. And so that's the Marte Mapu take for me.
I'll tell you who is a safety who did get some props yesterday, Craig Woodson. People say Woodson looked way better than they anticipated. Again, it is May 20th, and to the whole look what they look like out there, Morgan Moses, absolute unit. I'll just leave it at that as we go to commercial.
They're not in pads, but I'll say this about Craig Woodson is he's 26 years old. So, like, he's...
Wait, he's how old?
He's 26 years old. I mean, he's the oldest rookie they have, so... If there's anybody that's going to look good from the rookie and be able
to
went to Cal, smart guy, it would be the 26-year-old.
He's on the 8-year college plan, apparently, at Cal, which is he's smart because he went to Cal, but somehow he was in college till he was 26. Anyway, we'll figure it out along the fly. 617-779-7937. Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we got to get to that one segment per show where we talk about Jordan and what's going on with her. There's no red pants today. But there are tales of a cat fight? A Christmas party cat fight on Nantucket? That's next here on WEEI Afternoons.
Bully. Meow.
Now, more of WEEI Afternoons.
With Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
For us.
That was Bill Belichick talking to his buddy Ryan Clark. Yeah, the us could be North Carolina, could be Jordan, it could be that Jordan reportedly not only wanted a piece of ownership of the show, but also, come to find out later, thanks to the New York Times, was also negotiating with a different production company to do a similar show, competing production.
Balls on her.
She has big ones, tell you. I said it yesterday. She has big ones because that was Belichick on one of the other issues and scandals that Jordan has been a part of. Now we have word, thanks to People and Page Six and the voices out of Nantucket that tell us there was a heated exchange between Linda Holiday and Jordan at a Christmas party in December. Jordan showed up without Bill Belichick. No Bill Belichick. And the girls that were DJing were Linda's daughters, her twin daughters. And apparently they went at it pretty, pretty good. There was a tense verbal exchange and some things were said. So, and this is on the heels of, we had the other report from whatever the Nantucket publication was, basically saying that Jordan is being iced out on Nantucket in the social circles that Linda has been entrenched in for a while now after, what were they together, like 15 years? Her and
16,
Belichick?
Yeah.
16 years. So, yeah, she's kind of entrenched out there, and the younger Jordan is trying to elbow her way into that whole situation. But the thing I took from this, like, Jordan had to have known that this party included Linda Holiday and Linda Holiday's daughters, and we said it, it's a small island. You probably know what the hell's going on. To go there without Bill, like, aren't you just asking for trouble? Or you're looking for trouble, or you're looking to assert yourself and kind of show your big ones and put them on the table, because that's ballsy.
Think she has, like, yes, ballsy? That's brass football, to say some. Do you think? You know, we've talked before about how Belichick has blind spots, Andy, socially and emotionally. Do you think she seems so hyper aware, so hyper focused that she couldn't possibly have the same kind of blind spots? But what in her coding and programming would make her think, oh, this will be a great opportunity for me to ingratiate myself into the scene, mend fences with Linda, and take a step forward?
Wait. That's what you think her intentions were?
What do you think her intentions were? To fight her and end up on World Star?
Her intentions were to, look, I'm here. I can buy a ticket and come in and be in your circle, and I'm dating your old guy. It's not to.
So that was going number one on the corner of the sofa? You know what I mean?
No.
Marking territory, if you will?
Yeah. That's her peacocking and basically saying, I'm Bill's guy now. Ha, ha, ha. And you know what? I can come to this party just like you know the rest of y'all. That is, she's very much wired very similarly to the guy she's
maybe made. Maybe she is then. Back to my first question. Maybe she is because that is a level of discomfort. I don't know if any of us could. I don't even think Sacha Baron Cohen could handle the discomfort of that.
She's kind of taking all this on. You know, she wants to be, look, this is her opportunity. She sees it. It's a power grab and she's got opportunities that she's never had in her life. And so she's going to leverage everything she can to kind of get what she's always aspired to get. If you know what I'm saying.
And Ted, I know you printed out, you referenced it earlier in your three-point stance, I think, the New York Times article there.
It's an impressive document that's on this table right now.
It's a tome.
Highlighted.
Well, I mean, she did. We talked about it with Pablo Torre when he was like, yeah, I talked to 11 people here and 10 people there. This woman, and Ted, I don't know if you have the name of the author of that New York Times article, but she...
Yeah, Catherine Roseman.
Catherine Roseman, she went to P-Town, she went to Bridgewater State, went to the pizza place to see if there was any students that would talk to her. Like, she's been boots on the ground trying to really cover this story. And, you know, there's going to be more of that. That's the problem. Like, you referenced earlier Belichick controlling things. Yeah, it's one thing to control Andy Hart at Patriots.com or Mike Reese at the Boston Globe or the Patriots reporters that need to deal with you every day. No. These are now like investigative people that have worked in news and journalism for a long time that they smell stories. They smell opportunities here, and they're gonna work because people read them. People talk about them on the radio like we do. So I don't think we're done with the information here, Ted.
And I don't either. I think part of it, you guys, is that there's so much. It's like what she has done on his behalf and what they're both doing together. It's amazing all the details, everything that they are trying to, the books, the trademarks, the charities, trying to just, control everything and optimize their position together as a couple is incredible. And there's so many details, the TMZ articles that keep coming out, this New York Times, it's detailed stuff. So people are talking. There's just, that's one thing I take away is just, man, Bill doesn't really have anybody that's, it used to be so insular. No information never got out of Foxborough. Now it's everywhere. I think the fascination is, of course, the older guy dating the younger girl.
Yep.
And so that's what brings in the non-football fan, if you will.
Yeah, this is tabloid. This is, the old, I don't even know if they have them anymore, but the supermarket tabloids, all those lines.
Oh, they
with
still
you.
Got them. Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the world that this is going in now. This really isn't about Patriots, NFL, football, college football, or anything like that. This is about, celebrity, and as you said, a salacious relationship between an old guy
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill's book landed on the bestsellers.
Oh, I saw that.
You don't Who's say. Book? How about that?
Whose book?
Here we go. Andy's convinced that Jordan wrote the book. But
I can tell you who didn't write the book, Bill Belichick. There's no way in hell Bill Belichick wrote the book.
Yeah,
I
but that happens
know.
A lot. When
aren't you supposed
people,
to write it as told to?
I don't know. I don't think that's like the biggest hill you want to die on with that.
No, it's not. It's the least of his issues right now. The least of the things I would criticize him for now.
And also, she can go to that Nantucket party. Like, it's a very, very big party in Nantucket and in Massachusetts. And in fact, she went with one of her closest friends, Miss Massachusetts. So she did.
That's okay.
Oh, wow.
You had to know those what she was getting into. Like, you can't act like she didn't. She knew what she was getting into. She of course she can go. Just don't expect to be welcomed when you do go.
And she said to the lady that confronted her at the party, look, I didn't come here looking for a problem. I came here to enjoy a party with my best friend.
But wasn't she the problem just simply by walking in the door?
Yeah, you believe that?
She was Linda's problem.
She should have found a mirror.
She knew what she was doing. Absolutely. Anyway, up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we had a great conversation earlier in the show with Red Sox manager Alex Cora. He talked about another win without him on the bench. He talked about the need to go to his daughter's graduation. He answered the question if he had anything to say to the critics out there that criticized him for going to his daughter's graduation. Alex Cora up next with WEEI Afternoons.